Welcome to Imperfect Leaders, where the country's most inspirational leaders are totally vulnerable. On today's episode, we are so proud to welcome Monique and Melvin Rodriguez, the amazing founders of Mielle Organics, the hair and beauty brand, which over the past decade has proven to be the fastest ever growing consumer startup in the history of beauty brands, and was recently acquired by none other than Procter & Gamble. You won't believe the challenges these guys had to overcome, and how the most basic and fundamental of all leadership qualities, love, L-O-V-E, love, helped them power through insane obstacles during their incredible journey, and how it continues to inspire others from every background and from every corner of the world. So sit back and enjoy today's episode with my new favorite entrepreneurs and my new favorite couple, Monique and Melvin Rodriguez.
What we have been able to accomplish and build in a very short time frame is very unusual, and it hasn't been seen. And so when we would have these conversations, you know, with the bankers, you know, a lot of bankers didn't believe in us because, quite frankly, they had never seen an African-American company build something from scratch and have the momentum. And it was kind of like, well, is this really real?
Yeah, but the reality is as you think about the humble beginnings or the financial humble beginnings, you know, Monique and I, we embrace the no's because the consistent no's, it lighted a fire in us, right, to go get the yes. And so we were okay to operate where we were. We were okay to operate within our means. We were okay to bootstrap and leverage assets and savings and things that we had built up personally and invest in the business because at the time in the early stages we knew we had something unique and special. You know, but again, as many startups or African-American startups, it's a challenge, and we lived it, we embraced it, but we didn't allow that to defeat us or discourage us as it relates to what we were seeking to accomplish.
But Monique and Melvin, how did you feel at the time when you kept hearing those no's, recognizing that probably a lot of people you were talking to look like me, a white middle-aged male, and you're two African-Americans just trying to get things started? How did you feel and how did you process that?
You know, obviously, I think I'm a pretty unusual person because the no's actually fuel me, and it makes me more determined to push harder and to really like prove the person on the other side of the table wrong. Because it's like, if you told me no, if you felt like I didn't deserve to take money from your financial institution, I took that back as, you know, then it's not meant to be. Then the partnership is not meant to be. If you don't believe in me, I'm still gonna believe in myself. And actually, you just gave me extra fuel to ignite this fire inside of me to keep pushing forward, because I will show you that I do deserve a seat at the table, and I do deserve an opportunity to open doors for people that come after me. So for me, it was added fuel. And, you know, I also, as I look back over the journey, I'm also quite thankful for the no's, and I'm thankful that, you know, we were not given capital upfront in the beginning, because sometimes with especially new entrepreneurs, you may take that capital, you're diluting your shares, and then you may start spending when you don't necessarily need to spend on certain things. Whereas if you don't have that capital, you're more scrappy and you're more like, I gotta really grind it out, and you're more resourceful. And that's really what is the grit about being a true entrepreneur that's building something from scratch. And I would say if we had the capital that came to us very easily, we wouldn't have that same grit and grind to like really be resourceful and bootstrap our company. So for us, it made me more determined.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. Do you ever go back and say, oh man, you made a big mistake? Or I'm sure you're not like that, but what advice or what coaching would you give to all the folks that said no, not really digging deep enough to find out who, not only about your product, but who you two were as human beings, as people, as leaders, as entrepreneurs? Would you coach them in a different way?
Yeah, you know, I would say, you know, I would say this, and I'll back up for a moment. You know, as we think about, I just touched on your prior question, as we think about the no's, right? And Moni talked about the fuel, but for us, it's really leaning on to who we are, and which we are believers. We we land on our faith in always in all that we do, you know. And so when you tell me no, and I revert back to the word, and it says that all things, it didn't say some things, it said all things are possible. So when you tell me no, I lean on my source. And so that kept us, and that fueled us, and that it continued to ignite us. And as I think about the messaging I would relate to those institutions, it's simply this. Entrepreneurs, right? All entrepreneurs, African-American, no matter the creed, no matter the race, they deserve a chance. They deserve an opportunity, right? You know, when we talk about the American dream, the ideas, the principles, and all those things that we've learned historically that our forefathers and all those great things that we hear about that have done, the dreams, the Steve Jobs, the Bill Gates, the dream, the ideas from their humble beginnings, right? They were given a shot. We all deserve a shot. We all deserve an opportunity, right? And so I think it's something that truly institutions really need to embrace, because quite frankly, you know, small businesses are the driving economic engine for the economics of America, you know, which we know today. So I just think it's really just give them a chance, right? I mean, what's the worst that can happen? You know, I just think it's you know, make it make sense, obviously, but I just think. You know, it's very short and simple, you know, and again, it just imagine what that can do for them and for others and so on and so forth, as we think about the well-being of others. Because sometimes a lot of people, they get discouraged, they get depressed, they get anxiety. It translates to issues with mental health. And just imagine you as in a position of an institutional partner, where you could give that individual a chance, and how that will ignite and lift that spirit of that individual, and how that can be of a blessing to someone else, you know. So I just think it, you really have to really think about it. And I just think everyone deserves a shot.
You guys are not only African-American, you're not only a female entrepreneur, Monique, but you guys are husband and wife. What is it like working together with your husband?
What is it like, Monique?
And no, I started with you, because I know if I do it the other way, Melvin will say, oh, it's perfect. Happy life.
Yeah. No, I would say definitely building something with my husband has truly been a blessing, because just to see like the evolution of, you know, when we were kids, because Melvin and I, we've known each other since 12 and 13. So we've literally grown up together.
And where did you guys meet, by the way?
We met in junior high school.
Okay.
Yeah. So just to see like, you know, the evolution of like who we were as kids, the environment that we came from, the neighborhood that we came from, like statistically, we shouldn't even be here having this conversation. And to know that the odds were stacked against us, and to see where we were, to see the mindset shift, and to see how we were both able to mature as individuals and become leaders in our own respective crafts, mm-hmm. has been truly rewarding, you know, for us to see, like to build something and to see it become successful, and to also enjoy the fruits of our labor together. Mm-hmm. It's something that for me is truly special. So that's something that, you know, I honor. And also knowing that, you know, we work so well together because we have totally opposite skill sets. And I think that's very important when you have a husband and wife duo working together, that is very important to understand what your role is, what you're good at, and what your spouse is good at. And how can you two complement each other and not try to overshadow each other in the work environment. So basically, you have to take all egos goes out the door. You have to have a mutual respect for each other's gifts. Obviously, for us, our faith is our foundation. We keep God first in everything, and we operate our lives as God, family, and business. Do we always get along? Do we always see eye to eye? Absolutely not. But for us, we know that we have a bigger vision. And for us, our vision is our legacy for our family. So even when we have our arguments and our disagreements, we focus on, you know, who was wrong, who was right, does it really matter, and apologize, move on, because we know that we're creating legacy and generational blessings for our family and for the generations to come after us. So when you focus on the bigger picture, everything else that you argue about seems very minute.
Yeah. And just to add to that, Jeff, you know, when you think about marriage, right, you make a covenant, then you become as one. And so you begin to ask yourselves, well, if we are one, how come we can't build as one, right? I mean, you really begin to just, you know, meditate and think on that. And as you study historical unions where it may have been challenges with the, you know, marital couple working together, what have you, we begin to question that. Because quite frankly, you know, we're one, we've made the covenant before God, so it is so. And so with that, I think it really gets down to it, to Monique's point, respecting each other's boundaries and gifts and talents, right? And I think it's also ultimately the plan, right? The goals, right? So what's the goal? What's the end goal? What are we seeking to accomplish in this business venture, right? And so for us, no matter, you know, the issues, the personal issues, the disagreements or what have you, but what's the goal? How do we stay course on what's the goal, right? And for us, we've always agreed that it's the mission, it's our purpose. You know, we believe that we are have been put in position for purpose and not profit. You know, Monique and I have never been money driven because we understand what money can do to people. We understand that success and money can become people's God. And so as they begin to idolize those things, it can create dysfunction amongst the marriage. And so we try to and have worked to not allow that to happen within our union. Now, again, people see us and they see us in our form. Yeah, we have agreements, we have disagreements, and we argue and what have you. But again, at the end of the day, we understand who we are, what we represent, and what we're seeking and looking to accomplish. And it has just kept us at bay to really build and do some unique things together. And quite frankly, it is that much special when you build together versus doing it all thyself by self. And because again, it's, you know, it's great to share your success with others versus it all being about thyself.
In a way, since you have such a common, you know, mission and purpose and values, like in a weird way, when you have disagreements or even, you know, quote unquote fights, is it even better when you work your way through it because you know you're growing even closer together towards a common mission?
Absolutely. Because I think it's, and I think you need that. I think you need the disagreements, the arguments, the frustration, the frustrating moments. But then as you begin to think about those things and you say, wow, right, it strengthens the bond, right? I think it allows you to it demonstrates that we can overcome obstacles and adversity and things that we may incur in life. But at the end of the day, when you think about us as a marriage, you think about life thereof, the gift of life, the blessing of life, and those things, it's, you begin to say, wow, we're not going to allow those things to negatively impact what we have and what we've built. You know, we argue all the time. I mean, you know, even just, you know, I would say, you know, to make name an example, you know, she wanted to, you know, call it spend $1 million on some talent for marketing initiative for the uh-huh. business.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
And we, you know,
well, Monique said, hey, Melvin, like, why don't we spend a million or two on some talent to help promote the business? And what'd you say?
And I'm saying, you done lost your freaking mind. and I'm saying, because for me, I'm a numbers guy, and I'm, you know, what's the return? What does that look like? I couldn't comprehend the vision. And so we would contemplate and go back and forth and argue and, you know, take it home and not speak. And so, you know, because again, for me, it was a lot of money. It was a huge investment.
And especially because of your early bootstrap roots, you know, every penny counts. All of a sudden, you know, Monique saying to you, hey, we're at a different stage of our life cycle. If we really want to expand our reach, we have to spend some money on talent.
Yeah.
And honestly, like, you know, usually that's a lot of our disagreements are about that, because, you know, I am, you know, and we were just even having this conversation. We were watching a movie the other day, and you know, I'm like, I'm that person. Like, I'll spend and I'll invest and take that risk if I know that we're going to get a return on that, and we know that's going to be great for the business. But he's more level-headed and like, okay, wait, you know, we have to watch our spending, and you know, we can't just do this. We have to think about it. What's the strategy? So that's kind of like, we sometimes bump heads a lot on, you know, me trying to help him see like what's in my head and the vision of why I'm looking to spend this and why it means a lot to me, and him giving me a lot of pushback.
Do you think that when he's giving you pushback in the moment, because the vision is so clear to you, that something's wrong with Melvin? Why aren't you seeing the vision, Melvin? Like, what's going on through your mind, and how do you finally get him to come around to see your point of view, if you do?
So I also am a fat person. So if he does not agree with me, I will do tons and tons of research to prove my point to him as to why I am suggesting a certain thing. So just like yesterday, for instance, we were talking about a subject, real estate, for example. You know, I pleaded my case to him of, you know, why real estate is important. And, you know, he hears me out, but he doesn't seem like he's paying attention to me at the time. So then I'll go and find my research and fact check and pull it up to him and have him read it or listen to whatever it is that I'm trying to prove. And I'll have him hear it from someone else to prove my point. So if I can't get across to him, or if I feel like he's not paying me any attention, I'm going to always bring evidence as to why it makes sense.
And Melvin, so it sounds like she's not only a fact-based person, but using her empathy, she knows that that approach is going to work better with you to convince you to change your mind. Like, how do you feel when she comes back at you with facts?
I don't know. I get
a couple's therapy session.
I get warm behind the ear. Yeah, it tickles me, and it still frustrates me, because for me, I'm in ROI, I'm in capital preservation mode, I'm in, you know, those things, and you know, when she does that, it pisses me off.
But it works. But it works eventually.
Yeah.
Eventually, yeah. It works.
Yeah. So, and she'll go, no. And like, and personally, she wants to do like a huge expenditure, call it in something in fashion. I said, Monique, you're nuts. Like, what do you mean? Like, they're taking you to this personal room and showing you these things. Oh, that's wonderful. And then they send you a pro forma of what, you know, said item was going to be. And I'm like, you out of your freaking mind. Like, what's the return on this fashion item?
That's so fascinating, because I would never be able to understand that either, Melvin. But I also,
makes no sense.
But I know that I don't have that vision. I don't have that competence. I don't understand fashion, but Monique, you know, I don't understand beauty, but Monique does. And right. So is that what you meant when you said you both have your own unique competencies?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you saying that also just helped prove my point of what I always try to tell him.
No.
You saying, you know, because
that is not
going to
validate what, just because you're saying it. No.
I am an expert and I understand this space, so I know what I'm talking about. Thank you for saying that.
No.
Well, and Melvin, were you at UPS back in the day?
Yeah. Yeah. I was on the engineering side. Yeah. I was there for just about 20 years.
Okay, so no, that makes perfect sense, and I can see your analytic, you know, mindset at play, and I can see, you know, Monique's visionary mindset at play, which to me is why it's so interesting about how you guys work together, and why I think there are so many lessons for other people, not only husbands and wives, but any partners, and like, it's leveraging empathy, and it's really understanding how the other person's brain thinks about decision making. And like you say, Monique, you bring data to him when the vision itself isn't enough, and eventually you guys get to the right solution.
Exactly. And that really, you know, it really gets you to the place of aligning to the spirit of compromise, you know. Mm-hmm. And whether you agree and you disagree, but I think the bringing the data, the insights to the vision, it helps. Because for me, I'm a individual that needs to see it and digest it and understand it for it to make sense for me to invest, if that makes sense.
It does. And that's how I think. Let me switch topics. So in addition to husband and wife entrepreneurs, you're also a mother and father entrepreneurs. So you have two kids. How do you balance parenting with entrepreneurship?
No, that's a great question. You know, I don't like to refer to it as balance because I feel like you would never be able to balance everything. I think, you know, for us is really focusing on prioritizing in different seasons of your life. So in certain seasons, you know, you may have to go to a business meeting that takes precedence at the moment, you know, or in certain seasons, you may have to go to our kids' track meets or cheerleading competition that may take precedence at the moment. So it's really just constant juggling and looking at our calendars and making sure that as we operate our lives, we're operating under our values, which is what I mentioned earlier, God, family, and business. And for us is making sure that our kids always feel inclusive of what we're doing. Even from the very beginning, our kids would travel with us. You know, I've always wanted them to feel like they were a part of us building, because I never wanted to build a company that my kids resented us for because, you know, we left them or abandoned them to focus on, you know, making money. Like, that's not my intention. My intention was to include them, make them feel like they're a part of it, and to show them, you know, how we can build this generational legacy together. And so when they're older and they continue to tell our story and they tell that story to their kids and their grandkids, they will tell the story from a place of being a part of something great. And so that's how I've always operated. And, you know, for me, you know, I'm the type of mom, like, I don't miss certain like moments with my kids. So milestone moments, such as like their first walk or, you know, their high school dance, homecoming, like I have canceled meetings and not travel places because my daughter has a homecoming dance and she's gone to homecoming every year that she's been in high school. And it's the same thing. But for me, it's, I'm still going to be present for certain moments like that. And so for us, you know, and I even have conversations with my kids, and I think that's very important for you to have check-ins with your kids and ask your kids to grade you on your parenting. And I will ask my children, like, am I being a good mother? Is daddy being a good dad? Like, what is your feedback for us? Because I don't want you to get older and say, I wish my mom would have done this. Like, tell me now so I can work on improving. So being very open and honest and transparent with your kids and, you know, taking their feedback and actually doing something with it and implementing so they can see that you're just as passionate about parenting and being a good parent to them as they are being good kids to us.
Yeah, and just to add to that, Jeff, you know, as Monique mentioned earlier, she ranked and prioritized our lifestyle, which is God, family, then work. And that is the order of how we operate. You know, Monique and I, we love our kids, and we understood and have been totally aligned that our presence as parents together is necessary under no circumstances, right? And we weren't going to allow anything to deviate our presence and being there for our kids. You know, Monique and I, as we all know, there are a lot of parentless households or single household parents. And you know, I grew up single household, raised by my dad and so on and so forth. And so for me, I wanted to ensure that, you know, when we had kids, that we were raising together, that our kids, we understood that our kids, that we were their first role models, you know, and so we wanted to have that presence in raising and parenting and so on and so forth. And also too, you know, as we think about the decision that Monique and I made, right? We made a decision to go into the entrepreneurship vehicle and so on and so forth. We understood what we were undertaking and so on and so forth. And our kids didn't sign up for that, right? So our kids, as I mentioned earlier, they deserve to have the presence of their parents. They deserve to live to be kids and so on and so forth. So we made that decision, and we also made the decision that we're still going to be there and that they were going to be there. And then furthermore, Monique and I wanted our kids to see. Mm-hmm. We wanted our kids to see what we didn't see growing up, right? We wanted our kids to see mommy and daddy together, raising our kids, raising them together and traveling together and being there with their sporting events, et cetera, because we did not have that growing up, as many kids in America don't have. So we made a commitment to do that as well, so on and so forth. And as we think about switching the narrative of generational family chaos and fatherless or parentless kid households, we wanted to go against that. And so we took the charge to lead in that regard, and we've done, you know, done, in my opinion, a pretty good job so far.
Well, I do too. I would say more than pretty good. I would say exemplary. But I would also think, as you say, we want our kids to see, it's seeing what we talked about earlier, that, you know, you can be different and have different strengths, and you can disagree, and you can get through that, you know, through a respectful process and become stronger together.
Absolutely. And most recently, our daughter, our 18-year-old Mia. So we have two daughters, Mia and Mackenzie, and Guinness World Record book for you. Both our daughters were born on her birthday.
Oh my God. It all ends.
Yeah. So October 15th was just passed. They're 4 years apart. They both came early, prematurely, and they were born on Monique's birthday.
Crazy.
That's, yeah. So anyhow, but Mia recently, you know, obviously she's, you know, entertaining, you know, colleges, and, you know, she's doing her essays for colleges. And so basically, she did her essay and Monique shared it with me. And to see how well she articulated herself in this essay, and more in depth, or in particularly how she began to talk about the story of her mom and dad, which is us, and talked about, you know, our humble beginnings, because she remembers, she was, you know, she was young enough to remember when we first started Myel. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she seen very well, you know, our struggles and our humble beginnings and our pain and what we went through, and just to kind of share briefly, Monique can touch on it, you know, what kind of birth Myel was. You know, we went through a situation or unfortunate situation in losing our son Milan. Monique was pregnant and endured a severe you know, issue with her pregnancy and so on and so forth. And we battled it for at the birth of our son and end up losing him 6 months of battling the brain injury he suffered. And so, which ultimately led to the birth of Myel and so on and so forth. But more importantly, for her to touch on that painful moment in her essay and what that, how it impacted her, but by her seeing how mommy and daddy persevered through the pain, through the struggle, through the adversity, it strengthened her. It gave her strength. And it brought tears to my eyes. I have to tell you, when I read this essay, it was just wow. And the reality is, as parents, you know, you're working, you're providing, you're nourishing, you're going, and you really don't have no idea how you're impacting your kids because they're watching. Mm. They're sponges, you know, and to see how she articulated herself in this essay, it was just so touching. And again, leading by example, and that was, I mean, that was just, you know, just mind boggling.
You know, yeah. How about you, Monique? How did you feel? And what did you learn anything from about how to be better leaders and better business people?
Yeah. Everything that I've told them, everything that I've done, you know, they are actually paying attention and they're listening. Even when we don't think that our kids are listening, because half the time I don't feel like they're listening to my lectures. But when I read her essay, it really was a heartfelt moment, because I'm like, wow, she does pay attention. She does listening. She does listen. Everything I'm saying is not going in void. All the values, everything that I have, you know, worked so tirelessly to instill in her, she's actually utilizing those skill sets. And even seeing her take the initiative at her high school that she's in, she's a vice president of her high school. She is truly a leader in her own right. And she is a leader because even she said it in her essay, and her specific words were, some people look to celebrities and athletes as their role models, but I don't have to look to outside for a role model. I have role models within my parents. And so, you know, that was very touching, because we all live and strive to be our kids' first role models. And I know I've said it, you know, several times that I don't want my kids to look to outside world for an example to be like. I want them to look at mom and dad. And, you know, for her to say that, it was truly confirming to me that you know, that our hard work is paying off and that the values that we're instilling in our kids, you know, is working. And sometimes you don't see that, you don't get that reward as a parent, but, you know, reading her essays, you know, for college was my reward to show, like, you know, I am listening to you, Mom, and I'm paying attention. And that gave me comfort that when she does go off to college, that she's prepared.
Yeah. But do you think in some ways having parents that are so successful makes it hard for, you know, your kids or other kids to develop their own, you know, comfort in their own skin and be authentic leaders? Or do you think that they're trying to replicate you? Because, you know, this whole idea of authenticity is so important too.
Yeah, I would say it becomes as hard as based on the parenting or what you put into it, right? And so, and what I mean by that is this, it's really first and foremost practicing embracing humility, right? And staying grounded and practicing and embracing appreciation. And so what I mean by that is work ethic, right? Drive. And I think it's the notion of whatever it is you want to accomplish in your life, you truly can. But there are prerequisites in this life, in your life, you need to fulfill consistently in order to get those or to enjoy the fruits of your labor. And so we instill those values consistently in our kids. So meaning, you know, granted, they have a much, much better life than Monique and I ever had growing up as a kid. They're very fortunate. However, they understand that everything that mommy and daddy have accomplished, they've worked for. Tirelessly, they work for. So they understand they deserve it to enjoy the fruits. For them, they understand that if they want it, right, they have to work for it, right? And that translates to appreciation. So then when they begin to accomplish certain things, or let's just say if they were, you know, failing on a certain subject in school or whatever it is, and then they worked hard, they worked, and then they actually accomplished it, it does, it grounds them. It gives them great humility and so on and so forth. So for us, we try to lead by example of, again, remaining humble and those core values have manifested into them to where they understand if I don't do the things I'm supposed to do in school, for example, if I'm not producing good grades and being a good student, I understand penalties shall come because of my actions. So we instill those values in them, and as a result, they have, I think it has really, for example, our daughter Mia, she'll tell us, Mom, Dad, I don't want any of your money. I don't want your money. I'm going to earn my money. I'm going to do the things I need to do to be successful in life. And this is a 17, 18-year-old kid telling us this. So again, that shows us that she understands the value and the significance of working for all the things she wants. And she understands that she's going to get out of this life what she puts into it, you know? And so again, that kind of was an illustration for us to say, wow, you know,
the kid did something right.
Yeah.
When you look at Mia's friends or just sort of this younger generation of up and coming, you know, talent, do you sense like that a lot of people just seem more entitled, you know, unlike Mia, like that they expect things, like there's an expectation that things are going to be handed to them. Not like Mia that, you know, knows that she has to work for things, doesn't want your money, you know, is very resilient, you know, knows how to work through tough times. Like I worry sometimes when I look at some of the younger generation that there is a little bit too much entitlement.
No, definitely. And I, you know, I think that the entitlement comes from, you know, the instant gratification, you know, in the digital age that we live in. People feel like they're entitled to know your business. They feel like they're entitled for, you know, if you create something, if you make something, they're entitled to receive some of it because of a relationship. Like there is entitlement on so many different platforms. And I think it just comes from this society and the generation that we live in. And people, like, they look at us and they look at us as like, okay, you guys are overnight success. I should have that same type of success. But not really understanding the journey and the process that it took to get to be successful. Like, you know, and I say this all the time, people want the promise, but they don't want to go through the process. Mm. And you know, for us as leaders, it's important that we always continue to share our story and we talk about what does the process look like, because we don't want people to think that this was an instant success overnight. You know, we had to really work hard and really grind it out to achieve what we've been able to achieve. And I think that, you know, when I look at the upcoming generation, what I would like to show and lead by example is to really show that work ethic, because nothing in life is gonna fall in your lap. And we tell our kids this all the time, opportunity is not gonna just fall into your lap. You gotta go out here, you gotta meet people, you gotta network, you have to go get whatever it is that you desire to get. You know, what you put out there, what you put into it is what you're gonna get back in life. So if you don't put out a good work ethic, nothing is gonna come back to you. And you know, you're gonna be lazy and you're gonna receive the fruits of being lazy. But if you have hard work, you have a good work ethic, you're gonna receive the fruits of that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's lacking in the new generation.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, a lot of kids are being raised and influenced by the power of social media, by the influence of things that they see that are nonfiction or fiction. Mm-hmm. And I think it's they're being raised and led by the crowd versus being raised and led by their parents. Mm. And I think that's a significant issue in our country today, and it continues to compound negatively, impacting the youth. So I think it's obviously something that's a whole entirely different conversation that has to be had, and as we think about the influence of social media and what it's doing negatively to our kids. Which is again goes back to the importance of the child being raised by its parents and being raised of humility and gratitude and so on and so forth, and core values that just doesn't exist today.
Yeah, and is that why it's so important for you guys to get out and tell your story? I mean, can your story help change, you know, so much systemic, you know, issues that are in our society today?
I think so, Jeff, because we have a unique story. You have two African-American call it kids that met a very, very long time ago at a young age. You have two kids that were united for what they had no idea what they were united for, but we were united, and we've built and created something unique together. We're raising our kids together. For many may get discouraged and say, well, if I'm raising a kid, I can't do that. You know, for us, we tend to think about it differently, because we believe that truly all things in this life, as long as we have breath, as long as we wake up today, tomorrow, we have a new chance, a new opportunity. We believe that we can accomplish whatever it is we want in this life. And more importantly, when you think about the Melbourne and Monique story, the Mayel story, this young couple has been blessed, but they truly believe they have been blessed to be of a blessing to others. There's a light shining, there's an anointing shining on this couple to show the world that you are truly more than an athlete. You are truly more than an entertainer. You can be whatever it is you want in this life. This is a husband and wife that took a different path, right? They didn't build their success in an entertainment sector. They didn't build their success becoming a superstar athlete, right? There was an idea. They nourished that idea manifested, they worked that idea, they worked the plan consistently, they remained humble along the way. And along the way, it was never about them, because along the way, they've always had the mindset of serving, serving the underserved first, then they were selling consumer goods. It's never been about extracting. It's been about how do we deposit to others? How do we show others, right, that they too can realize their dreams and admiration. So for us, when you think about the Melvin and Monique story, and I'll tell you this, Jeff, I've been saying this since we started Mayo, the story must be told. Mm-hmm. The story must be told, because we understand our kids can't be what they don't see. Our communities can't be what they don't see. And they need to understand and see of a significant story. There's a unique husband and wife, African-American husband and wife, that started a brand less than 10 years that had become the number one growing brand in the world, right? That recently embarked in a historical merger and acquisition with Procter & Gamble and all those fascinating things. But it's not about the money. It's about the mission. It's about the purpose. It's about the cause. It's about them embracing life. It's about how they touch others because they wanted to truly see not themselves win, their children win, but all of us win. They really wanted to see and lead by example to try to create an atmosphere of a greater America, a better America, a unified America. And that's how we thought, and we try to lead by example. And so with that, as I think about the storytelling and its significance, I think about the legacy historically many, many years ago, many, many years later about the brand, because when you think about it, it was an idea, it was a vision. It started upstairs and Monique wrote the vision. It was plain as the Bible tells us so, and we executed the vision. We agree, we disagree, we had issues, bumps in a row, we had financial issues, but somehow this couple made it through. They stayed the course. They stayed the course because they knew on the other side of the Jordan River, they knew the other side, their promise will manifest. So they embraced going through the process, right? And so I think in the storytelling, it's significant, and we're very adamant about this, because we know we've done something very special and unique. We're the only brand in history, in the history of our sector, to have done what we've done in less than 10 years, ever, ever.
And I had no idea. And just so the listeners know, I mean, you guys had an investment earlier on from Berkshire Partners, you know, one of the top private equity firms, but then even bigger, you know, Procter & Gamble, this huge consumer product company, they bought your brand totally, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they brought, and so, I mean, it's incredibly inspirational, and not to throw cold water on such an amazing story, but how do you feel when the 1% of the critics out there, the very people that are using your product, you know, say, oh gosh, they finally sold out, you know, they took the money, and it's more like, I think Monique, you said it's more about selling up than selling out. Like, what do you mean by that? And where did the core values and, you know, the way Melvin beautifully articulated the story, how does that help you get through the criticism? Because nobody loves criticism like that.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And so when I think of selling out versus selling up, to me, selling out is taking the money and turning your back on the community and never looking back. Selling up is taking an acquisition partnership like this and making sure that we reach back and help the community that has supported us over the years. You know, our whole philosophy is we focus on people first, then product. You know, we've never been a brand that that extracts dollars from the community and have never poured back. From inception, we have always considered our community and thought about how can we lift as we climb this ladder of success. And I think that when you look at the criticism, I think that, you know, before you criticize anything, we have to do a better job of educating ourselves. Because when you look at the information that's out there, there is so much information. And in the age of information, ignorance is a choice. So if you choose not to educate yourself and understand why partnerships like this is great for the community, then of course you will tend to criticize what you don't understand. And we tend to criticize it because it's also not normalized in our community. There are not enough Monique and Melvin Rodriguez's, people of color, that are building brands, becoming acquired, so it can be a normal language within our community. Because when you look at it, this is a normal trajectory of business. You build something great, and the whole goal is to scale and to partner with a conglomerate that can help you scale even further. And when we normalize this conversation within our own community and we show how this benefits, so when you talk about selling up is showing how does this partnership benefit the community? Well, it benefits the community because now it creates more accessibility to the products, so more people can have access to amazing products, right? It creates accessibility to have more access, more resources, more expertise for our community, because we have created a nonprofit as a part of this partnership that P&G has donated $10 million. And Melvin and I, we matched it with an additional $10 million to show that our core values is deeply rooted in our community. So with P&G being able to do that, it shows that they care about what's important to Melvin and I, and that's our community. So with this nonprofit, now we can invest and give more resources to our community and continue to build up, because I know that I have been able to walk through open doors and I stand on the shoulders of people that have gone before me. And my job and my opportunity is to allow for the people that come after me, the next generation, to stand on my shoulders and to be able to have more Black women that have a seat at the table. And when you have the P&Gs and the Berkshires of the world have these conversations, they remember Melvin and Monique and the value that they have created that allows more people of color to have the same type of opportunity. That's what these partnerships do.
Yeah, no, I agree. And just to add to that, Jeff, you know, as I mentioned earlier, the notion of our kids and our communities can't be without MC. And if you don't see it, you don't know, right? You don't understand. And it's the same correlations to individuals that may have made those particular comments of selling out, right? Yeah. You don't understand. And so we took it as an opportunity of, well, instead of getting discouraged and upset, we saw an opportunity to try to help and try to instill something in the mindset to educate. Because there's a motto and thesis that I go by, which is, if I can encourage you to change your mind, change your life, and walk with Christ. Change your mind, change your life, and walk with Christ. Just imagine what you shall be. And I understand, but I understand why you're saying what you're saying. I understand why you're joining the crowd. I understand why you do it for the cheers of the crowd. But I'm here to tell you that's not the way. Mm-hmm. And for us, we try to lead by example, right? Because as we talk about creating and building wealth and generations of wealth, how do we do those things? But we understand many don't understand that sector. We understand. And so as I think about positively impacting our communities, one of the things as part of our not-for-profit Mile Cares is that we're seeking to address that, the thinking, the mindset, the mental health and well-being of others, right? And so we understand that, you know, with social media and negative conversations that are had, and they have the pity parties and all those things, and they're conversating based on unfactual information. Mm-hmm. So we understand, we don't get discouraged, we get encouraged to try to help them understand. And so we've kind of taken that charge to lead by example, because when you look at Melvin and Monique, we're still here. We're still CEO, CEO, we're still running and leading the company, right? And so again, for us, we decided to embark on a historical acquisition because it wasn't just about us and our family, but it was for others, because we want us to see. Mm-hmm. We want us to see. And we understand, again, if we didn't take the charge, if we didn't accept the challenge, if we didn't accept the calling, we don't know, right? And so again, we just accept the responsibility to do our part as best we can, and hopefully others will lean in and follow and do it even better, right? And that's what it's all about.
What is next for Melvin and Monique, and especially Mile Cares?
You know, really focusing on mental health, and that's what Mile Cares is, it represents. Like, how do we help transition the thinking of our community? Because when they are in an environment, because we are starting in our backyard, the environment that Melvin and I, we grew up in, and we understand that where we come from, those kids are not in an environment where they can dream big. And so we want to help transform that thinking and to show two individuals that come from the same background that they come from, show that relatability and how we were able to be in an environment where we can dream, and we want to encourage them to dream bigger. Because yes, it was easy for us to say, okay, we're going to teach you how to be entrepreneurs, we're going to make sure that we give you education. That's secondary, because we can't formally coach these kids into entrepreneurship and education if they don't have the mental mindset. Mm-hmm. So we started a program called My Mental Mindset, and it's truly that. How do we transform their mindset and shift their thinking so we can make sure that they have a strong foundation, and then build them up with educational programs and show them a path to entrepreneurship? It starts with the thinking first. Yeah. And if you don't have that, you don't have anything.
Yeah.
Monique and Melvin, I love you guys. I've only known you for an hour. We've never talked before today, but I love you guys. Thank you for sharing your story and for being so vulnerable and for such amazing inspiration. I know that listeners in this country and even around the world will love hearing your story. And I really do hope it inspires them. So thank you very much.
All
Thank
right.
you
Thank
again.
you,
We
guys.
appreciate it, and thank you for having us.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and we hope you enjoyed today's conversation. If you'd like to attend and join deep dive discussions, please visit www.imperfectleaders.com. Until then, we'll see you next week.